This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Fire up. Let's
season
go.
3, episode 67. That was a huge voice crack. The Daily Intermission podcast. 67. I look at 67 and all I can think about is Zdeno Chara just pasting Max Pacioretty into the stanchion, burying the guy. and unfortunately, you know, he couldn't provide for his team this year during the playoffs. But Justin, how are we doing today, my man?
I just want to say I've been on here for a couple months now. That's got to be the hottest start to an episode we've had, and I absolutely love it. But I'm great. Weather's unbelievable here. We are in the summer swing. It's been warming up. I'm golfing tomorrow at noon. I'm golfing Monday evening. Work's in full motion. Workouts are going for summer training. Sports are winding to the finals. It has just been it's been good. Nice to get in that summer just rhythm. You know what I mean? That routine, you find your relaxation, you have time to do kind of things you want to do, and it's enjoy the weather. So I couldn't be happier right now. How you been doing?
I'm doing well, man. I'm holding it down. And when I think about, you know, the climates that we live in, when you get the pure blue, light blue sky with the sun beating down, you remember, it just kind of brings joy to you. Like, it's like we fight 100%. Through. I'm not sure that the people who live in the Arizonas, the Californias, the Floridas, you have no idea what it's like through January, February, March. It is a grind mentally. And I mean, I'm thinking about all the folks there, you know, holding it down in the Callaway and Northwest Territories and all those folks. I mean, you know, hats off to you. But yeah, I'm super excited. I mean, there's nothing better than this time of year. We talk about it in sports, but just in life in general. Obviously, the golf course is firing on all cylinders. So life is good, man. I'm due for to crush some pints around like a campfire, do all the summer things that that we like to do. But listen, I wanted to talk this up in the pregame. It has nothing to do with sports, but it's something that's quite interesting. And Elon Musk is a guy, obviously one of the, you know, he is the innovator, I would say, just kind of in North America right now. Just the guy who, you know, whether it's SpaceX with the space travel and AI and the artificial intelligence and electric cars. But he got approval today, Justin, for Neuralink. So this is a brain chip that's going to be inserted into human beings. And the goal of this chip will be to be able to program people who are paralyzed, you know, say from the waist down, or people who, you know, are different types of disabilities. He hopes that this chip will solve that issue. I mean, Elon Musk, he's going to go down, like he's going to be one of those guys in like a couple hundred years that his name will be etched in history for a long, long time.
For sure. And it's crazy. Like you hear him describe himself when he was a kid. Like he was a guy that was just constantly thinking, trying to solve problems and all this. Like he hasn't stopped. I swear his downtime is literally just, what is a problem that I could try to solve?
Yeah.
And at an amazing rate, he goes and solves it. It's actually insane. So yeah, this would be something that'd be revolutionary, obviously, if this is something that has success and people with those disabilities or handicaps or whatever it may be, get that opportunity to kind of get those things back in their life. That'd be absolutely insane. Like, again,
like blind and deaf. Like, can you imagine?
It's just, if you look at everything he's done, it's hard to say which is the best innovation or create whatever it is. This guy's absolutely resume is unbelievable.
AI is a little scary. I'm a little intimidated by artificial intelligence.
He's talked about it. He's worried about it too. Yeah, I don't 100%. Know if you saw that.
Oh yeah, with Joe Rogan.
Saying, yeah, it may have already gotten too far and stuff, but that's Who knows what's going
That's
on?
That's a conversation that is way too far ahead of the Daily International podcast. We're not getting into that stuff. Least. But I did want to note that that Neuralink, that company that will be inserting chips into brains of human beings, they've got clearance from the FDA, the Federal Drug and or the Food Drug Association in the United States. That could be butchered. But yeah, so we'll see what happens there. They'll be testing human trials. So hopefully that's a go. But we've got a jam-packed episode. In quarter one, we're getting into the NHL. Yeah. Quarter two, NBA. Quarter at the halftime show, a lot of good feedback here. This is a nice one. So it's going to be guess the athlete with their career accolades and kind of, you know, accomplishments. And then quarter three, we'll get into the MLB. And then in quarter four, we'll talk about the trunk slamming of Michael Block and the PGA Tour, everything in the golf world. I mean, we talked about it last episode. It was either going to be he was going to get in the mix True. Or he was going to be DFL, dead fucking last. Let's get into the conference finals, though. The Florida Panthers, man, they continue to stun every single NHL team they go against. They go against the Boston Bruins, go down 3-1. They come back, win in seven games. They go against the Toronto Maple Leafs, wipe the floor with them in five games, and now have brought out the brooms and swept the Carolina Panthers. Matthew Tkachuk with another game winner. Sergei Bobrovsky playing well. I mean, this team is into the finals. This is a team that is one game away from missing the playoffs.
Who would have thought? Who would have thought, Greg? I mean, this is and you know what? Like, it's an eight seed. It's a wild card team. They came back down 3-1 against Boston. But since that second round began, they've looked the farthest thing from an eight seed. Like, it's one story for a team like this eight seed to kind of be scrappy, kind of get their way to the end. That's an incredible Cinderella story. This team looks like they were the juggernaut team the whole way and haven't slowed down a second. The way they play and the names and the abilities on their team, like, they are so skilled, so fast, and so almost, you want to say loaded, and I mean, that's definitely recency bias, don't get me wrong, but they do have pieces up and down their lineup that are not where did these guys come from type of guys. Like, we're talking about Reinhardt, Duclair, Barkov, Tkachuk, Verhaeghe, Montour on the point, Ekblad, Stahl brothers for depth. Like, again,
this Sammy is a Bennett.
Team that it's like, Sam Bennett's another one, man. Like, he's been in the playoffs. He's been in the league a long time. They play with so much poise, awareness in the D zone. Their D zone's got to be one of the most underrated things on this run. They are so good in front of Bobrovsky, and we're going to get into Bobrovsky. He deserves all the credit. He makes the big saves, but they are actually playing a 200-foot game that is honestly what's been stifling teams. They can't seem to break through this Florida. I don't want to say defense because it's a whole 5-man unit. And then Florida just capitalizes on power plays or whatever opportunity that comes from it. And they kind of just sit back for their opportunities. And teams can't figure out how to score on these guys.
Well, you look at it, too. Like, we talk about the guys, the depth guys that the Florida Panthers have. Like, a guy like Sam Bennett. I mean, what's he making? $4.5 million. Probably chips in around 20 goals during the regular season. Not a lot of people are talking about him. Sam Reinhart probably making around the same amount of money. $4 or $5 million. Going to chip in 20, 25 goals. Not a lot of guys talking about him. Anthony Duclair, been bouncing around the league. Had a great World Juniors. Incredible speed, but then you get your top heavy guys. You got your Barkov, you got your Verhaeghe, who's going to put 40 in, and just, we know how, you know, how he can put the puck in the back of the net. You got your Matthew Tkachuk, and I mean, the decor has just been as steady as, I mean, this Brandon Montour kid is going to get paid. He's going to get paid, and it's just funny. We, you know, we'll get into it. I'm not going to bring up that point because I do want to talk about it in full, but I mean, this decor has been phenomenal, and then you get Bobrovsky playing hot. It's been lightning in a bottle in some sense, but this team's poised. Like, the belief that they have right now, like, they get in the dance. They wanted to get in the dance. They got in the dance, and they're making the most of the opportunity, which is exciting for the NHL playoffs because teams are looking around.
Yeah,
you know, we remember the St. Louis Blues in 2019, last at the Christmas break, come back, win the cup. The 2014 was it 14 Kings? Were they the 8 seed, or was it the 12 Kings? Yeah. Anyway, one of the Kings teams.
Somewhere
around there. And the NHL is just, it changes so much from the regular season, and all you need to do is punch your ticket. We know that the number one seeds never do well, and you've just got to get in the dance, and the Florida Panthers are proving it in front of our eyes, and it's been great to watch. And Paul Maurice, this GM, the balls to say to Andrew Burnett after a president's winning season, you know what, we're going to let you go. We're going to grab this guy, Paul Maurice from Winnipeg. Actually, you know what? We're going to take a guy that was second in the league in points, 117 points. A guy like Mackenzie Weegar, who had a phenomenal season. And we're going to trade them both for Matthew Tkachuk. And a lot of people during that trade, Justin, a lot of people kind of favoring Calgary going, wow.
I was.
I think I was on the same side going, how did they get that much for Tkachuk? And now we're looking going, how are those guys feeling in Calgary right now? 55 points for Huberto, Mackenzie Weegar over playing for the championship that nobody cares about over in Slovakia or in Latvia or wherever they are in Europe.
Continue on your role. Montour for a third round pick only.
Unbelievable.
Like this Bill Zito. That's the GM
of Billy Z.
Panthers. He's nominated for the he's nominated for the GM of the Year award here. Not enough talk about him through this playoff run. Not a household name, obviously. Like you said, you already ran through it, man. Like he's made so many moves at just the perfect time, and they've worked out phenomenally. Even the Bobrovsky contract. Again, I'm only bringing this up because you went through the rest of them perfectly. But the Bobrovsky contract, like he was willing to pay for a guy and said, "I'm bringing him in because we want to win the Stanley Cup." And I know that this is an all-in move, but that's our plan here. And he committed to the all-in. He kept going after it. He didn't get rid of Bobrovsky or try to move him or whatever. Like you said, he was a GM that wasn't going to sit around and watch this team kind of just maybe make it playoffs and do whatever. Like he showed last year, hey, we won the President's Trophy. We didn't win the Cup. That's our goal. Went all in again with Tkachuk, Montour, stuff like that. So again, a ton of credit to him, but I got to ask the question to you. I'm going to run this through you. You give me right away your immediate reaction here. Matthew Tkachuk, three game winners in that series. Two were in overtime. One was with 4.3 seconds. He had four goals, one assist in four games in this series. Bobrovsky, 11-2 in this playoffs, 1.5 goals against average, and a 65 save game with the shutout in this series of four games. We're going into the finals for the Florida Panthers. Who is leading your Conn Smythe race? Because this is probably the closest two for any team we've seen, and it is that close. So are you leaning in a direction right now? And what do you need to see from each for you to say that they're going to win in the finals? What do they got to do in the finals for you?
Yeah, I think for me, I think maybe it's probably going to be unpopular, but I would give it to Bobrovsky personally. I think the goaltending position is so important, and he has just been so phenomenal. Like I said, 11-2 in the playoffs, and just he's the rock back there. Like I think they are getting outplayed in some games. Like they're not supposed to be 11-2, or they well, I shouldn't say
no,
that,
you're
but
right.
You know they probably should have lost some of those games. But Bobrovsky, his goals above expected. Is just goal saved above expected is just unbelievable. What was that? Yeah. Was that like 15? And the next guy was at like 6 in the playoffs.
Insane.
Like, it's so incredible what this guy's doing. But the popular pick here for the league, for the media, for the poster boy, great personality. And I mean, it's so close. So I think that they would lean Matthew Tkachuk. I think people lean the superstar, people lean the face of the team, and I think it would be Matthew Tkachuk if they were giving it out, but I would pick Bobrovsky personally. How about you? Where do you lean on that?
I think I'm right with you. I think if you really look at it, I mean, okay, first of all, you said it, and I agree 100%. That 11-2 record with Bobrovsky in net, with any other goalie, I think that could be an 8-5, like, you know, like it could be a 9-3. Like,
you might be bounced against the Bruins.
Yeah, 100%.
Brad Marchand, time winding down, game 5, breakaway. Boom, Bobrovsky shuts the door.
The big save, big save. He's made both the big save and all. He's been in the zone. Like, okay, I agree. The flashy name, the flashy highlights, the flashy Conn Smythe is Matthew Tkachuk, OT winners, whatever. People are going to sweep under the rug, and that's normal because that's the game of hockey. Game 3. 1-0 Florida Panthers win. Reinhardt second period goal, only goal of the game because it's a 32 save shutout for Bobrovsky. Like those games get swept under the rug, and I understand that because that's not as flashy. It's not one big heroic moment in OT. It's a constant in the zone game against a top 2 seed in the conference in Carolina, a top 2 seed in the whole league in Carolina. The guy shut him out. And not only shut him out, 65 save game. Like, this guy's done everything they need for him and more. Like, they, like, we can't stress enough. They've now won two rounds. They, like, he, we're saying 11 and 2. They could have still been like 11 and 7 and still been in the finals. But he's playing so good that this team is actually untouchable. People will forget that Florida Panthers didn't score that many goals this series. It was like 3-1, 2-4.
Yeah.
Like that 3-1 and 2, you're not winning every game unless Sergei Bobrovsky's playing the way he is. So I'm leaning Bobrovsky, but I think what I need to see from them in the finals, if I get a point per game plus from Tkachuk with maybe a game winner or two.
Yeah.
I can,
it's going to be tough to not give it to him. Yeah.
And I think Bobrovsky, though, he just has to stay as is.
He's just win. Just win now.
Yeah. Under all you got to do is win. 1.75 GAA.
Yeah.
And play the way he's playing, he gets it. But Tkachuk's going to still need a couple more heroic moments for me. But yeah, it's an interesting race. And hey, it's entertaining, man. These Panthers are entertaining.
Another side note in this series. So obviously, we saw Brooks Koepka there Monday and Wednesday. He's chugging beers out of the Wanamaker Trophy on Monday. On Wednesdays there, okay, you obviously saw the video of Koepka. Like, was he wired on something or was he just absolutely in the bag? Like his.
So I was going to say, the whole chugging beers, I don't think it was exclusive to chugging beers out of the Wanamaker Trophy.
Okay. I mean, yeah.
I think the guy's having a week or two here where he's not going to remember much of it.
Yeah. So he's absolutely indulging in more ways than one. But then Jaromír Jágr in the mix. And low-key, a woman about half his age around his arm, something you just love to see from one of the game's legends. Jágr doing it. Still doing it.
Right?
I love seeing it from the guy, man. Do you remember the time? Do you remember there was a headline and Jaromír Jágr was in bed with a young model in Czech Republic, and she was like, she threatened him. She's like, I'm going to post this on social media if you don't give me a certain amount of money. And he's like, honey, I don't give a fuck. And she posted it all over the media. It was just him like under covers, like in the bed.
So the guy does what he wants.
Oh, he's a legend.
People may forget. Is he retired yet? Is he retired from the game of hockey yet?
He owns a team in the Czech League. And he played three games this year, age 51, just suited up. Like there was a couple suspensions, and he said, "You know what? I'm good. I'm in."
There's been videos of him, like walking onto the ice for his team, like not just like pickup league, like full on professional Czech league. He carries out like 7 or 8 sticks with him onto the ice to the bench. Like I think this guy actually changes sticks every second shift. It's his kingdom is Czech. He is the king, the hero, the superstar, whatever you want to call it. Czech love this guy. It is insane, and rightfully so.
Oh my gosh.
Living the best life possibly. Oh. Sneaky Jaromír Jágr.
Oh my gosh. He is the Leonardo DiCaprio of the Czech Republic. Just like as soon as they hit age 27, next. Let's move into this next series, Justin. Obviously, we're moving out west, and I was kind of leaning towards sweep. I mean, obviously in game 4, Vegas gets up, and you're like, okay, well, this is it. Well, no, Jason Robertson responds twice, moves this thing to overtime. Joe Pavelski, the guy who I deep down want to win the cup the most out of the remaining players. Dallas gets on the board, 3-1 series. I mean, the Jamie Benn play was egregious. It was over the top. Can't happen. How you feeling about this series?
Yeah, this series is an interesting one. I just want to say, Jason Robertson, kind of about time. Doesn't it feel like it's
we talked about it last moment? We talked about it last episode. You're being a little quiet.
Tops 100 points, and that's the daily intermission bump that's been coming
big
lately.
Time.
That call out. The great call out seems to be hitting. We saw Maxey do it in the NBA now, where Robertson wakes up from the great call. But they needed this from him. It's been the Roope Hintz show, and now Robertson shows that obviously he's going to be able to he's the depth that we thought they needed.
Yeah.
Apparently they didn't need until the conference finals. I don't know that I see Dallas win the series, but what I do say is, again, Aiden Hill's in net. He's, again, I know he's brought them this far. I'm not taking any credit away from him, but what I am worried about is the maybe regression or return to the Aiden Hill that is under the surface to a degree here.
Yeah.
And possibly not even just Aiden Hill. The defensive game that they played in front of him since he stepped in, we discussed, and how much they've locked down in front of him. That's not easy to do. I think that's something that's underrated in terms of just the casual viewer. Like, it's tough to keep all those shots to perimeter, try to limit everything. So it's not crazy to think that this whole weakness in net thing could start to creep up on Vegas here. My thing is it too late for this series and we see Florida rip it apart more than we could see Dallas come back? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I think either way, we're going to see this exposed to a degree. I just don't know if Dallas has enough time, enough firepower to go three straight more.
Yeah.
Ottinger, again,
he's been so shaky, man.
It's
he's up and down, up and down. But if he gets hot, you know?
Yeah. Well, we keep saying that. We keep saying that if he gets hot, but he hasn't. So that's what concerns me, because I still think of Ottinger as a guy who could absolutely steal a series and could go on a three-game winning streak or four-game winning streak. But he hasn't actually proven that.
The next game's the big one. The next game's the big one. You start to put a little doubt in the other team if you get another one. This is the pivotal one, because then it's like all eyes on game six. It's like, can they force seven from being down 3-0? And it'll be interesting to see. But let's talk about the Jamie Benn play here. Obviously, in game three, captain on captain, Mark Stone goes down. Jamie Benn finishes the hit with a cross check to the face. His comments afterwards saying it was unfortunate that that was the landing spot for my stick. He gets two games. Greasy play. You hate to see it from a guy like Jamie Benn, who's just an unbelievable piece, unbelievable leader for that team. But if they can get one more, get him back in the mix, you never know. But that, what'd you think about that play from Jamie Benn?
Yeah, it's interesting, because I mean, I want to say from experience, obviously, like, you don't fall into two game suspensions very often. And that's what he kind of tried to play it off as, is like, oh, I was going to the ground with Stoney, and that's where my hands and stick came across, right? Over the top of his head and neck area. So, like, I don't buy it. I just don't think that. I think it was something where he was maybe trying to have more of a rough him up kind of play, little playoff hockey type of situation. First shift of the game, a lot of adrenaline, a lot of wanting to set the tone. I think he got caught trying to get away with a little too much. Or possibly what he intended wasn't to be quite what happened. But regardless, I think it was a pretty aggressive situation, to say the least. And obviously what came out of it wasn't what Ben hoped for, but I don't think it was a crazy suspension.
No, you know what sucks too is in that moment, and not that I'm saying I've been in that moment, but I've been in some competitive situations. And in the moment, your blood's running high. It's the captain of the other team. You're the captain of your team. Things are fast-paced, and you just, in that split second, made a poor decision, and it's going to cost you a couple games. So I'm not holding it against Jamie Benn. The NHL playoffs, bloods and emotions are running high, so you hate to see it, but you know, we'll see if they can come back. It does feel like it's going to be Vegas, Florida, which nobody predicted. It's going to be exciting. We'll preview that on Monday, if that's the case. If not, we'll keep following the series, obviously. But, I mean, the hockey world's winding down, but there's still a lot of content pouring out from it. Good stuff.
Absolutely.
Good stuff. Any final notes from the NHL, from the National Hockey League?
I think I got just a question for you as we wrap up both series. So say it is Vegas and say it's Florida. Who do you think would be, if I were to tell you at the beginning of the season?
Yeah.
Obviously, we knew Eichel was on Vegas by now and Kachuk was traded. If I were to tell you beginning of the season, Kachuk's going to win a Stanley Cup this year, or Eichel's going to win a cup. Not the teams, but those two players, how electrifying they are, how different than they are than maybe the Sidney Crosby and Ovechkin superstars. Like, who would you have said, like, no, you're crazy, he's not getting one this year, or even in his career, like, between those two electrifying superstars?
I mean, personally, I would have said probably Florida's not doing it this year, just because Vegas has been there. They've been on the deep run. They've been to the final. The Bruce Cassidy, I know, is a good coach, the fresh voice, and it just seems like they've got that deeper makeup in Vegas. But the way Florida's playing, I mean, I think it's going to be an incredible final. Like, it really is. And I know that the Canadian markets may not be all in on it, but I think it is going to be good for the States, good for those growing markets. Vegas, I mean, they got crazy hockey fans down there. Sure. So what about you? What's the bigger surprise?
I mean, I'm a Buffalo Sabres fan, so I've seen Eichel for years and I know how great he is. But in terms of just like a person and like kind of the character stuff and off ice that's gone on, like, I just find it odd to think of him, or maybe guess soon possibly see him lifting a cup above his head. Like, I just feel like that's something that Maybe I didn't expect to happen this soon, so maybe that's why it's stunning. But, like, this is quick for him to join a new team, possibly win a cup. And I don't know, just I always go through that with teams and players. Like, can I see that guy lifting the cup? Like, what does that look like in my head? Is that realistic or not? I probably wouldn't have saw Eichel lifting the cup this season that quick joining Vegas compared to even Tkachuk, obviously, joining pretty quickly too. But obviously speaks volumes to the impacts they have, because obviously a lot of other things change around them too. But to step into a team that new and when get to the cup final or even win one, that says a lot about obviously what you can add to a team.
Would leave a little sour taste in 97's mouth if he watches the guy that was picked behind him go and win a cup in his first ever playoff run. But that's just for another episode. Let's move into the NBA here, folks. Obviously, we talked about it last episode. The Denver Nuggets are waiting in the finals after a sweep of the LeBron James Lakers. LeBron celebrating Bronny's graduation, the whole shebang. Can you imagine being Bronny James? Like,
no.
Like, he's, no. I mean, you think about high school lives and the cars that he's driving, the money that he has, the probably the females that he has at his disposal, the networks that he has. It's almost unprecedented, I bet. Insane. You what he has access
high school
to.
Life. What about USC this next year, man? USC he's going to.
The roster Bronny that guy is going to put together at USC is going to be one for the ages. Oh, and if I could be privy to that information, I would be just, I would love it.
What about the day-to-day things? Like, how's this guy going to operate in a classroom or in a cafeteria or anything like that? Like, how does he operate? It's going to be a insane world. Like, Zion, you got to think, was absolutely crazy when he went to college, let alone Bronny James.
I mean,
pivot off that. You see the LeBron James come out, said he was playing with the injury. The foot was just absolutely dismantled. Did you see that? I don't know if that surprised you.
Excuse the foot.
Didn't surprise me at all.
Swept. I love the names.
Did you see DeAndre Jordan's phone call to him? That was all time.
Oh, No. It was Dwight Howard.
Dwight Howard, sorry.
Yeah, yes. Trying to recruit him to Taiwan. It's like, LeBron, we got number 6 waiting for you.
And he was playing the whole, you could be the GM, the coach, all that. He was going right at him. He's having a blast with that joke because he's the whole Chamberlain of that league.
Dwight Howard's a beauty, man. Remember when they won and he was just ripping cigars during his interview? Man, I don't know why I remember that so vividly, because all we could do was just watch sports. And they were at Disney World in Florida, and when they won, Dwight Howard was just being a weapon during that whole saga.
They talk about players leaving on top, and they don't talk about it enough for like the player's mindset. Like, how do you feel going into retirement? He's doing it perfect.
Oh, this guy's
leaving the NBA because he kind of couldn't hang like he used to.
Yeah.
Goes and he's going to retire with the best mental state ever because he just becomes the
dominating best Taiwan.
In the world in Taiwan.
Taiwan!
Well done.
Unbelievable. It's a crazy man that he's made that decision. But let's move in out east, man. The Celtics are making this a series. Down 3-0. Yeah. You're thinking this thing's over. The Celtics win 2 games and dominating fashion. I mean, they were clearly the best team in these 2 games. And now you're like, okay, this is a series. And if they can go into Miami and get one, that game 7 will be electric. And they're looking to be the first team ever to come back from down 3-0. Jimmy Butler, quiet, a little bit quiet. That's the recipe to beat these guys. You limit Jimmy Butler. You limit his trash talking. You play him hard defensively. And you get her going offensively for the Celtics. And man, what do you think? I think they can do it. I do. I'm starting to believe again.
Well, so first thing with Jimmy Butler, like, they keep him quiet on the court, but then he comes off the court and guarantees that they'll win the series. I don't know if you saw that quote, but to me, that's a quote that's like,
That's a make or breaker. That's a meme. That's a meme waiting to happen.
I don't know that you feel like you have to say that though, if you truly believe that you're going to win the series, you know what I mean? Like, but again, that could be something where Jimmy's trying to be a leader and maybe put something out there for his teammates. So maybe that's a possibility, but it's not a poised, calm kind of quote to put out there. So I don't know that the Heat are feeling too great about this series either. That's a different Celtics team, and it happens all the time in playoffs. And it's one of the most fascinating things about sports, quite honestly, is how in a 7-game series, just how extremes of sides you could see of teams. The Boston Celtics looked like the Charlotte Hornets for the first 3-4 games of the series, and all of a sudden they just snapped back into this absolute wagon that they were all season, almost for the last 2 years. They've been absolute wagon, and they've shown it. They're hitting their shots. They're hitting their shots with depth. That, for me, when watching the game, was the big difference. They had four guys above 20 points. And when you watch them in past games, even the Sixers series, when I watched that series, it was like, okay, Tatum's making sure they win this game. Smart's hitting his shots when needed. Brown's contributing a bit, but Tatum's making sure they win this game. Okay, next game happens. Tatum's slow start. Okay, but Brown's picking them up, and Smart's able to be there for Derek White. This is what they've needed. This is what the Nuggets have got. This is what the Lakers got coming to this series. A guy like Derek White to show up, miss like three shots by the third quarter, and just have a night where everything's dropping. And then Tatum, Smart, and Brown are always going to kind of be consistent like they've been. But you get that fourth piece, and that fourth piece is the difference between scrapping at the end of the game for a one-point win or maybe a 1 or 2-point loss and absolutely dismantling team. When you get that fourth guy that's hot, Horford hasn't been able to do that this playoffs. He's been missing the shots, like hasn't been great from three. Derek White's huge. If Derek White or another fourth guy could be huge for this group like that, this series is honestly the Celtics more than it's the Heat. And okay, this next game for me, I'll ask you, you're the Celtics fan. This next game for me is the series. Like, I don't see a way Heat win game seven if it goes it. I can't see a way they do.
The momentum will just be all in the Celtics' favor. I am a little worried that it's going to be in Miami. And, Jimmy's going to be a dog. I expect Jimmy to show up in game six. I do. You know, I find it hard to believe that he won't sniff out at least 20. But that's why they play the games, and it would be a special story, for the Celtics to be the first team to ever come back. And we look at this city; they're not afraid of the comebacks. You know, we look at the Red Sox in 2004 coming back against the Yankees. Look at the New England Patriots down 28-3 in the third quarter. We look at the Boston Bruins down 4-1, 8 minutes left against the Toronto Maple Leafs. This city, they don't mind a little comeback.
Did you just create maybe our next halftime show? Boston Celtics comeback, Boston comebacks. I got quite the. Where would this rank, Greg? Where would this rank for you if they go on to win the title? Say they go on and win the title in seven. Say it's an unreal series. They go win it in seven against the Nuggets. Yep. They take down Jokic, but they come back from down 3-0 against the Heat here.
Yeah,
you said it. The Red Sox, the Patriots against Atlanta, Bruins, like. Where would this rank for you?
In three. It would be three because the 28-3 Super Bowl was that nothing tops that. That is everyone shutting their TVs off. Like, people are leaving the stands. The owner of the foul, like, that game's over. Like, it had everything had to go perfectly for them to win that game. And then the Red Sox hadn't won in what 91, the curse of the Bambino. Like, they had to overcome their arch rival in the Yankees. I don't think it's that much. True. Because they won in 08. I think it would rank right in that three slot in regard to Boston comebacks, but we'll see what happens. We don't want to, get too far ahead of ourselves here. Yeah.
And it's been what, the 80s? I want to say late 80s or early 90s since Celtics won a championship?
Come on, Celtics. Dog.
Or it was 08.
2008.
Prior to that.
Yes, exactly.
Since then.
Yeah, exactly.
I misspoke, but it's been one.
No, it's okay. Okay, I wanted some respect on their names.
But regardless, one since the '80s, it's a pretty big, it's a big,
big
championship,
market, though, exactly.
Nonetheless, yes,
yep.
Correct.
Yep, big market, big fan base. Hey,
I'm again, this series right now for me, I'm saying 50-50. What are you saying as a Celtics fan right now? Obviously, still needing two wins to the Heat's one.
I'm saying 70 Heat, 30 Celtics.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. I'm worried about that game six on the road. That'll go Saturday night. Obviously, we'll have game six in the or game five in the Vegas Dallas game on Saturday night as well. So Saturday night can be jam packed full of sports. Are you ready for some halftime show?
Let's get into it. Hey, you've been itching for this. You were hot last episode.
It's an interesting segment. I don't know how I'm going to approach this. Yes, I will. Okay, I'm starting off with you.
Okay, yep. So just so the listeners know,
yep.
Last time we did the comparison, and we'll bring that back. We'll sprinkle that in.
Yep.
This episode, it's going to be description of the career and the player, what have you.
Yeah.
We're guessing the athlete. We're seeing if we can guess the athlete. Do we want to set a rule? Do we want to say maybe three guesses?
I think three guesses.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
So, and then so maybe we'll see, after maybe after each guess, you can kind of add in a hint.
I like that. You know what we're going to do? We're going to make a little guess. I'm going to keep track.
Cool.
We're going to go, if it's one guess, two guess, three guess, or didn't get, we're going to keep track of it. Maybe have some stats to this. Let's see what the list is saying. All right. Gray's giving me the first one.
Yep.
Here we go.
Guess the athlete based on their career accolades. This individual is a six-time Pro Bowler. He was the NFL receiving touchdown leader three times in 2001, 2002, and 2006. He played for the San Francisco 49ers, the Philadelphia Eagles, the Dallas Cowboys, the Buffalo Bills, the Cincinnati Bengals, and the Seattle Seahawks. Who is it?
Terrell Owens.
Bang!
Come on now!
Bang!
You put an eagle on me? Good start. All right, let's go. Let's go.
Big.
All right, here we go. First one to Greg. Guess the athlete. 6'2", 210 forward. Six Stanley Cups. 20 All-Stars. A Hart. A Connie. Two Ted Lindsays.
Six Cups. Wow. Okay. Six Stanley Cups. That threw me for a loop, man. I'm trying to think here. It's not Anderson.
No.
That was kind of the unknown guy on Edmonton that we talked about a few episodes ago.
Okay. Oh yeah, Six. Yeah.
Are you gonna give me another, give me an era?
I'll give you an era. I got it right here for you. I'll give you. Do you want his draft year?
Sure.
All right, here's draft year. Here it comes. His draft year. Here we go. Okay. He was drafted 1979, 48th overall.
Mark Messier?
Mark Messier on the second guess.
Okay.
He's on the board.
Okay. Right. Did he win four with Edmonton and two with New York?
Five with Edmonton.
Five with Edmonton, one with New York.
He won four with Wayne.
Okay.
One
on his own.
Left.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Guess the athlete. This individual was drafted third overall in the NBA. He's played for four different franchises in the NBA. He's a 10-time NBA All-Star, one-time MVP. Who am I?
One-time MVP. Third overall pick.
Four franchises.
Did you say if he won? Oh, he's currently playing.
He's currently playing.
Did you say if he won a ring? You don't have to tell me if you did. Did you say that?
I haven't given you any.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Okay, so one MVP, third overall pick, four teams on his fourth team. Third overall picks, man. This could be a crazy guess. Did you give me All-Stars just before I put this out?
10-time NBA All-Star.
Oh, so that gets rid of him. All right. I don't love this guess right now. It's not enough for him. I'm going to say Durant, but I know that's not him. I'm going to need another hint.
Not Durant. He's won the NBA scoring title three times.
So that, again, just moves me towards a player like that. Four teams. He's won it four times.
He's won the scoring title three times.
And he's currently playing.
Currently playing an MVP, and he's played on four teams. The silence just must be killing the listeners.
I don't got much here, man. I need one more hint. I need one more. When was he drafted, at least?
Think facial hair.
Facial hair. Oh, James Harden.
James Harden.
Come on.
Boom.
That's got to go down as a three guesses.
Yep.
Good call. Yeah. Hey, I'll talk through my thinking a little bit more for the listeners. Hey, we're new to this. We're getting this segment rolling.
Yep.
We're just getting fever. All right. Here we go. My next one's still, we're going to stay NHL. Here we go. 6'3", 230-pound forward. He's got two Stanley Cups. One Hart, five Art Ross. and 3 Ted Lindsays.
Steve Yzerman?
Nope.
6 foot. I guess he's probably not that big. How many cups?
2 Stanley Cups. I'm going to give you another hint here. After each guess, we'll throw him. So he was drafted 5th overall in 1990.
It's not Mario.
Nope. Last hint. He's European and has played for more teams than you could probably have on a hand. Maybe 2 hands.
Jágr.
Jágr on the 3rd guess. Okay. How about the interesting stat there? 3 Ted Lindsays for Jágr.
That's interesting for sure.
That threw me there.
Okay, this could get greasy. This could get choppy here. This individual, all right, guess the athlete based on their accolades. This individual, he played for 4 different NHL teams: the Wings, the Kings, the Rangers, and Stars. And he signed with an ECHL team last year briefly.
Wings, Kings, Rangers, and Stars. Wings, Kings. And signed with an East Coast team. Oh, gosh. Wings, Kings.
Rangers, Stars. An undrafted player.
Oh, my gosh. I'm going to say Radulov, but that might not be
no.
it. Oh, what's another one?
He's Canadian and known for his pest-like play.
Oh, my God. Pest-like play. Man, Canadian for pest-like play. I feel like I should be getting this. He's still around in the East Coast.
You'll probably remember him on the Rangers and Stars more than the Wings and Kings.
Sean Avery?
Bang!
Sean Avery.
Sean Avery. Oh.
He signed with an East Coast team.
Last year, he went on Twitter with the Orlando Solo Bears and was like, "You guys are trash. I could still play for you guys." And he went down to training camp and just couldn't handle it after 3 days left.
No shot, dude. Yeah. Oh, my God. All right, I got one more for you here. Close it off.
Yep.
All right. We got a 6'3", 215 quarterback.
Okay.
2-time Super Bowl champion.
Okay.
1-time Super Bowl MVP.
Okay.
1-time MVP. 9-time Pro Bowler.
Okay.
And he's thrown for 51,000 plus yards with 300 TDs. In his
Eli game. Manning?
Nope. I'll give you this one. One team his whole career.
2 Super Bowls. I'm trying to think here of who won 2 and is he currently playing?
He was a first overall pick. No, in the Hall of Fame.
6'3" is not huge. I think he won more than two. Just a sec. I don't know why I'm blanking on his name. He wasn't a Cowboys quarterback, was he?
Not a Cowboys quarterback.
Who was I thinking of there? Why can't I think of his name?
He's got his number retired with this team. He's in their Ring of Honor. Legend at this place.
This is brutal right now. I'm trying to think of
not many start to finish QEs, one team.
No, there's not. And I'm trying to think of like a quarterback who won 2 Super Bowls in recent history, but it's like it was mainly dominated by like you weren't gonna give me Big Ben again, and he's not 6'3". No, he's like 6'6".
No, I'll give you this one. Here's a hand cap.
Sure.
Still involved with this franchise at a high level.
John Elway.
John Elway. Come on now.
Nice. Who was I? Why couldn't I think? Who was the quarterback for in the late 80s and 90s for Dallas?
Are you thinking Aikman?
Yeah, it's Troy Aikman. Okay, thank you. Just making me mad that I couldn't think of Troy's name. Okay, John Elway. That was an easy hint. That was a bit of a layup hint, but...
Hey, fair. Hey, we'll roll. Hey.
Yeah, we want to be correct here.
Absolutely.
I like
it. Absolutely. Listen,
I'm surprised he's only 6'3 because he loves the giant quarterbacks drafting Paxton Lynch and bringing in Brock Osweiler. Like he gets a hard on for quarterbacks that are massive.
A little bit of a hypocrite, maybe, with that sense. Or maybe he knew how hard it was at that height.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yep. No, all right, let's move into quarter three. We got some MLB talk here, and the Toronto Blue Jays, I mean, that response when they won 20-1, Justin, you're like, okay, these guys are back on track. We were chirping the wheels off them for losing five straight. They go with the next game, win 20-1. You're okay, oh, they're back. No, they go and lose the next two to the Rays, and let's just start with the pitching. Let's start with their youngster, Alek Manoah. And obviously, Manoah, it's his really second full season in the MLB. He's the one pitcher in their rotation that hasn't gotten paid. But he's been brutal. Like, is it almost time to be like, Manoah, like, we gotta send you down or, like, keep you out of a few starts? Because he has been terrible. He's almost dead last in some of these statistics for starting pitchers. Out of the 72 pitchers they've recorded in the MLB, like, he is, like, dead last in ERA and pitches thrown. Like, he threw, like, 90 pitches in just over three innings. Like, this guy has been terrible.
Which is so tough for this team because... We were talking at the beginning before the season started in our preview that you have some steady hands in the bullpen at least this year with Manoah and Gausman, and it's going to be whether or not the rest of the bullpen could peak at the right time. And now our top three Cy Young nominee last year is our worst pitcher and one of the worst pitchers in the league, and he's playing in the best, arguably one of the best divisions in the AL. So it's like. It's just the worst case scenario for this Jays team who we continue to say it. It's not a full team problem that's going on right now. It's quite honestly this pitching and it's just it's crazy that the pitching problem is coming from a guy like Manoah because he has no answer right now. No answer. He's 1-5 with a 5.53 ERA and his expected ERA is well over 6 right now. This is not a pitcher who looks like he could just find it. I didn't even think of that because of how well he was for us last year, but you might be honest. It might take it more of a drastic measure in terms of sending him down, maybe sitting him out a few starts. I don't may move him to bullpen or something. We've seen stuff like that done before where you need to figure it out for him because it can't just be something where he's struggling all year. They got to find a way to have his arm being elite because this team
They've had some bad luck, man. I mean, we think about Kikuchi last year coming over, and he was awful. Like they didn't. It was in this almost a similar situation. Like, what do we do with this guy? Do we send him down? And then Berrios has been on a bit of a roller coaster after sending him to like a $150 million deal. Like they hung Jay Ryu like 2 years ago. Ryu's their guy. Yeah, like he's their ace, and now he's just not even in the rotation. I guess he is, you know, making his way back. But let's just think too offensively. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. one home run since May 4th.
Yeah.
One dinger since almost the full month of May. Like, you got to get her going there, Vladdy. But their pitching is right now is because you've got Chapman and Bichette buzzing. And another issue right now at the Jays, Justin, is they're catching. So obviously we know Alejandro Kirk he was the guy last year, was an all-star. He's played really well, but they've got Danny Jansen who had the two walk-offs a few weeks ago. He's playing really well. Now he's a little bit banged up. Now they got to go with this Alejandro Kirk character who looks like an absolute lawn gnome. He looks like he's straight out of the Willy Wonka factory and he's not playing well. He's just not playing well.
And I want to bring it up too. And I'm a Jays fan. So I'm subject to this, I guess, lack of perspective too. This division is elite, so there's a little bit of an asterisk to a sense on their record and some of these performances. I'm not talking Manoah. Manoah's he's in trouble. He's got to figure it out. There's a lot to unpack there with him that they need to do as a staff. But in terms of being 10 and a half games back of this division lead and being last in the division, this probably like there's teams that are worst record or the same as of the Jays and then winning their division or top two at least. So like it's got to be said that they're only 2.5 games back or so, or 3.5 games back of the wild card spot. So like as much as,
and that's what you're playing for now. You're not catching, you're not catching the Rays. So that's kind of what that's what you've set your sights on. I think, you know, I think that we can come to the agreement that they're not catching the Rays. And that's crazy to say that in May.
It's true. And there's not a chance, let alone catch the Rays. Also now beat the Yankees from here on out and the Orioles from here on out. Like, so what I'm saying, all I'm saying is that yes, if you look at the division picture, and I don't discredit the division picture because we did believe that this team was a team that could win this division or could come top two in this division. So that's still a failure. But if you look at the grand scheme of the league, this Jays team isn't as much trouble as you might think. They still have the most hits in the whole league and the third best batting average in the whole league. So it's tough to say. They had a players only meeting after that last series that's finished. Right. I'm expecting them to come up big. I believe they play tonight against, it's John Blank on it, but I would be shocked, or not shocked, disappointed to see them lose this series.
In Minnesota. In Minnesota.
An opponent that I expect them to be better than and be able to top. I would be very disappointed and way more concerned because then you run out of options as a team. You've had the player meeting. The coach has already said his piece. That's why you have the player meeting, because what is ever going on hasn't worked. If you still can't find it, their next 10 to 15 games, Greg, are debatably going to be the biggest of the season.
Yeah.
Right here. How you respond to the trouble you're going through, especially when you address it in a players only meeting like that, that's substantial. This is a big stretch for them.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. The MLB, they're going to vote to move the A's to Vegas in an owners meeting coming up next month. I think, you know, you've said it best. It's really a formality. These guys are moving to Vegas, and I don't think it could come quicker. I mean, this franchise is a dumpster fire. It's been a few years now where they cannot field competitive teams. They've got the worst attendance in the league. And Vegas is, in front of our eyes, turning into a massive sports hub. And I think it's great for sports. I think it's great for, you know, the financial situation of these leagues. And I fully expect that ballpark will be buzzing most nights.
Yeah. 100%. Great weather there in terms of other options, obviously, and what's already in the MLB. So great options there. Las Vegas is just absolutely cleaning up. At what more do they need to do, and at what point do they pass in New York City, a Los Angeles, a Chicago? Like, I understand the history won't be matched. Don't get me wrong. A Boston, right? The history won't be matched. The tradition. Don't get me wrong. But they build their own history and tradition. We're seeing it already with Vegas possibly winning a Stanley Cup here. But you talk about MLB, NHL, NFL. You talk about the UFC fights that already own Vegas, the boxing massive pay-per-views that are already all over Vegas.
Yeah.
It's easy to put races there, Formula One, all this stuff, golf tournaments. Like, it's easy to do that there. I just don't, like, I don't understand.
It's how turning into the Mecca of sports. It really is.
For all things
and
sports.
I don't know, like, if it would be like, okay, it's going to beat going to a Rangers game or it's going to beat going to Gillette Stadium to watch the Patriots. But in terms of the full compass, like, okay, we're going on a trip with the boys. It's a bachelor party. Where do you want to go? Oh, well, we can go to Vegas and get all of the Vegas experience. Plus, we can go check out the NFL team in October. They got a home game, and then we're going to go watch their baseball team in a playoff game. And guess what? They're playing preseason as well in the NHL. And
100%.
I would think that the NBA is kind of circling that market going, well, we got to sniff out. We got to be there.
Yeah, LeBron already wants to be an owner. They've already talked about. Yeah. But I mean, MLB is perfect because you lose all the money at the tables. Hey, you only need 15, 20 bucks for a ticket in the nosebleeds of an MLB game. So you got option there now as So that's a huge piece as well.
But that's right. I've never been. Have you ever? You haven't been to Vegas, have you?
I've never been. No. But it's something that I, especially now, like it's got to happen.
Yes.
Soon.
I mean, it's kind of like if you're in North America. Like, that's kind of like on the list of things that you've got to check out is, like, you've got to go to Las Vegas once.
100%.
And I'm happy that I'm not, I'm happy that I'm like maturing because, like, if I would have went at 21, I don't know if I'm leaving. Like, I don't think, like, I think I might be still be there living on a cardboard box, busking.
I wouldn't be shocked about it. But, yeah. Just quick on the New York one, and I don't want to disrespect New York. I'm a huge fan of the MSG and all that. I haven't been, but that's as we're talking about Vegas, that's one I want to knock off the bucket list for an arena to go to. Vegas has already built quite the reputation and tradition and all this, and Swagger, what that whole pregame presentation of the playoffs of that Golden Knight coming out, the drums, all that. So
yeah,
quickly you could see that becoming a must see thing. But yeah, I think the A's are heading there. I think it's a good thing. So
absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's gonna be a few more weeks before we fully dive into the MLB. You know, just kind of like looking through the standings, and obviously the AL East is the one that we're focused in, and the Rays are just on a historic run, and the Orioles are right there with them, and the Jays struggling as of late. But are there any teams outside of the AL East that you're like, okay, that's a team that I'm circling come October? And I'm going to be like, yeah, they're going to get hot and they're going to play. And we talked about a little bit last episode about the Padres, how they've been struggling and they still are still four games below 500. Are you circling a team in outside of the AL East, either in the AL or in the NL, that you're like, I like that team for a championship run?
100%. The one team that...
Well, we did go over the Braves. Yeah,
Sure. But they're already at the top. So
exactly.
That's fair. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Outside of kind of like those top... Yeah.
There's one team right now that I'm looking at and I look at have... not come out to the start that people expected or they expected, what have you, that I see is the highest ceiling for them. And when I say high ceiling, one of the few teams that I could see being a World Series contender still that isn't still in that chase or looks like they're at the top of their standing is the Seattle Mariners in a big way here. 26-24 being a winning record, and this is a putrid start for them. So first of all, how bad of a start it's been and to still be in a winning record, like, I'm comparing that to like the St. Louis Cardinals. That is a putrid start for them. And it's done. Like, they're showing that they aren't what we thought. It's done. This team, though, is showing more of a sign of, we're not peaking right now. We're having troubles, but we still have the pieces to succeed. They're 2.5 games back of playoffs, still very much right there in the hunt, if not in a great spot to make that wild card. They're fourth in their division, is where people might think of them as a team that's out of it. Not by any stream. This is the reason here I see them being a World Series team. First of all, they made all the right moves in the offseason, filled a bunch of holes for themselves. Their pitching is phenomenal still. Runs allowed, their third. Hits allowed, fourth. Batting average against, fourth. ERA, third. WHIP, first. First in home runs against. First in fielding percentage.
Yeah.
And it's the classic story. The bats haven't woken up yet.
Been cold.
They're under 20th. In every batting stat, but they have the bats to succeed and make the long term. So when a team is in this situation, I look for what I call extremes. One, do they have an extreme where they show that they can be a top team in the league? And two, do they have an extreme where they're performing so below what these players on their team have shown that it is fair and it's expected for them to turn around and become elite again? And that's the bats on Seattle matching the pitching that they are producing, which they're expected to produce. So Seattle Mariners for me is the team that I expect to still have the ceiling of a World Series contender.
No, I don't disagree. Yeah, like, you're looking for, I mean, obviously we remember being Jays fans. Teoscar Hernandez is there now, and Julio Rodriguez, the coming out party last year. So yeah, that team can certainly turn it around. I'm looking at the Mets. They were my kind of my preseason pick, and they got off to a cold start, but I do like the Mets roster. So I'm going to look at the Mets to kind of, get things back on track. I don't know if they're going to catch the Braves, but I don't even think. I think MLB is another one where, like the NHL, you just kind of going to sniff into the dance and really anything can happen.
I like that call.
Let's move into quarter four here, and let's talk about the Charles Schwab. Obviously, it's been a long week for Brooks Koepka celebrating his PGA Championship win. Next week, we've got a big one at the Memorial Tournament, another elevated event on the PGA Tour. The LIV Golf Tour is playing somewhere, and I'm not sure what that event's all about. Who cares? But Michael Block. So obviously, his media tour this week, dude, was insane. He was up on overdrive in Toronto. Like, he's such a yes man. Like, yeah. So, I threw him on Thursday, was watching him, but we'll just talk about this first. He went on to Bob Menery's show. You know Bob Menery, clearly.
Yep.
Bob Menery is a big character in the sports world. He does voiceovers. He was a Nelk boy for a little bit. I mean, he's kind of blown up over, the last, say, 5-6 years. Anyway, he had Michael Block on his podcast. Well, I don't know how he drew this out of him, but he said, Did he ask him, like, if
Greg,
he...
Greg,
the, if he asked him, if he... This is... He said, Rory's clearly a better golfer than you, right?
Yeah.
And then he proceeds to say...
Like, He's like, you admit that Rory's a better golfer than you or something like that. Very, and it wasn't even like attacking or anything. Straight.
That's a yes,
question.
Of nice course. Yeah. Yeah.
It was almost a chance. It was almost a chance to give Michael Block another opportunity to look as great and humble and
exactly.
all this as
he is. And he goes, well, if I had Rory's distance, my iron play, my around the green play, my putting is world class. So is some of the best in the world. So, I mean, I think that was a bit much, especially I just thought that's a tough comment to drop, especially to Bob Menery. Did such a great job of chopping up that podcast and getting that out Thursday night before the tournament. And did things ever go bad for Michael Block? Plus 11 on round one, 81. Today he was plus four, I think, two double bogeys rolling in. Yeah. Here's where I'm going to give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt. The whirlwind that he just experienced playing at Oak Hill, playing with Rory, coming top 15th, the entire world is talking about this guy. And like everybody, every sports media outlet, even if you're not covering golf, you're talking about this guy. Yeah. He's got Canes. That's something I wanted to look at too. Who was going to sponsor him? Canes was one shoulder. And another one, I guess there was thousands of sponsors reaching out. Michael Jordan reached out to him.
He signed with an agency, Greg.
He signed with an agency. Oh. He needs a little downtime, man. He needs a little time to regroup, just go, you know, hunker it down with his family. And then the real test, the real evaluation for Michael Block will be at the Canadian Open. If he comes out and he shoots a million and he slams his trunk, that's the end of the Michael Block story. It was a phenomenal PGA Championship story, but that's an opportunity there. If he plays well, makes the cut, and kind of gets in the mix on the weekend or plays in the weekend, I think we can kind of start to talk about Michael Block maybe getting some more exemptions. But if he misses the cut in Canada, Justin, that's the end of the Michael Block story.
Where do you go from here with the sponsorships and even the Canadian Open in terms of they invited him? They wanted to kind of use that as a big pitching point, a big advertising point for sure after he came up to PGA. If you're the RBC, how do you now? Do you take down the little poster you had? Probably
No.
He's keep it up.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think that it'll still be fresh enough in minds, especially to like the Canadian Open. I went last year and it legit is a major. The crowds are freaking massive, and Rory is going to be bad. Like the crowds are going to be huge, and people want to know what Michael Block's going to shoot. Like that, I think it's going to be fresh enough, Justin, that people are going to be like, "What's this guy's going to shoot?" And I know they may not be the face of the tournament, but this is the last go about. This will be the last we hear about him if he misses the cut at the Canadian Open until next year's PGA Championship.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I do agree with you. Just because he's so inexperienced in terms of being an everyday tour player. I don't know how many tour players can do the media and get that much attention. I mean, no, perfect example, Brooks Koepka and all the other like winners. Okay. Michael Block, he won a major in terms of his mindset, his heart, all that. He won a major last weekend.
Yep.
How many times do we see a major winner just come back the next weekend and win the next tournament? Never.
Justin,
never.
It would be like you being called up right now to the Dallas Stars and you scoring an overtime winner to extend the series. And now they're like, what? Who's this guy?
And then next game, though, I'm expected to go and get a hat trick.
Exactly.
It's like me going up there getting the OT winner.
Yeah.
I would get all the media in the world for this rookie call-up and then getting a hat trick next game. No. I'm going to do what Block did. Probably going to get three shifts.
Yeah.
And on those three shifts, I'm going to have a turnover in the neutral zone, a bad dump in, I'm going to be minus one.
Yeah.
That's what Block just did.
Yeah.
And it's fair. Like, I get it. It is so fair. What the guy had to go through this week, the last thing that could have been on his mind was playing a great round of golf. I know he definitely was saying that he was and all that, but there's no way that was possible. But with that being said, I can't cut him that much slack, Greg. 120th out of 120. Is worst case scenario for again, and this would be a totally different story if he didn't have that one quote. You know what I mean?
Oh,
I feel like with this would have definitely been more of like a, hey, it was a great story. I really hope he bounces back at the Canadian Open. Like tough round, but hope he bounces back. It does look bad with what he said.
He's got to look himself in the mirror. Clearly, he's got to look himself in the mirror, and he was getting arrogant. He was. You could tell he was getting a little cocky, and that's what golf does to you. If you don't fully understand where you're at. And he had a really tough day on Thursday. Like the lies he was getting around the greens and the bounces he was getting.
That's got to be mental, no?
It was one of those days for him on the golf course. And obviously today, plus four, a little bit better. But like you said, man, he's exhausted. I can't even imagine. In no club pro's wildest dreams would they have just gone through what he did. The hole-in-one, the Rory McIlroy, it's just been insane for him. So the media outlets, CNN, Good Morning America, but we'll see what happens.
How happy do you think Koepka is about this finish for Block? You gotta think Koepka had a little bit of himself saying to him, come on, I just won the PGA, and now the PGA is going to kind of turn to this Block guy as their hero and kind of get away from maybe me winning with the whole live thing, whatever.
Yeah.
And now Koepka gets to sit there celebrating his PGA and had that little bit of extra cherry on top that Block was just absolutely blew up and didn't kind of keep that PGA glory forever on him.
Yeah, for sure. You mean it definitely took a bit away from his story, but I think that he was basking in all of the glory.
Regardless, I was saying it earlier, I think the best finish we could have at the Canadian Open, again, it's Canada's major.
So,
it's absolutely Canada's major.
Yes.
I would love to see a Block, Rory, Scheffler going into the last nine holes all right there with each other. That'd be just the crowd, like you said, the crowds would be absolutely lunatic.
I hope this is the year, Justin, that a Canadian gets in the mix at the Canadian Open. It's been so long since the Canadians won, and it just seems like this year we've got the most amount of players, like the most amount of talent, like with the Adam Hadwin, Mackenzie Hughes, Nick Taylor, Corey Connors, Taylor Pendrith. So like we've got some big names on the Canadian circuit now, but this week at the Charles Schwab Challenge, obviously we talked about Michael Block lost, but the British. Harry Hall, he wears the old school golf hat. You all know what I'm talking about. Yeah. He's minus 12. He's leading the tournament, couple ahead of Harris English and Emiliano Grillo. Adam Shank had a decent day. Our Scottie Scheffler's only six back. Justin Rose, one of our picks, is in the top 10. So you like to see that. Max Homa looks like he's having a half decent tournament. And I just want to mention Cam Davis. You're dead to me. He shot minus two yesterday. He's directly in the mix. Shoots a 74 today, four over, doubles the last hole, misses the cut on the number. Cam Davis.
So if anyone's keeping track, and I am, just for everyone, that's the second You're Dead to Me of the season.
Justin
so
Suh.
Justin Suh, the first one, and now Cam Davis. But no, how about Harry Hall? He chipped in on the one.
Yep.
Or whatever. He's got that hat on. I just looked at his player profile. I don't know much of him. He's 25 years old. I had to check this thing three times in a row to be like, just the hat, I guess, or whatever. Like,
He's a big dude, too.
Is this like a 38, 40-year-old kind of having his run here at this thing?
No.
25 years old, this guy leading. Absolutely insane. And Justin Rose, also, I just want to say this quick. He was my pick to win. He's not necessarily like, he's in the hunt for sure. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, he's still there.
Birdie fest. They are. But how about the little like season he's having,
man,
from Justin Rose?
Incredible season.
Not something you see from him for a long time. You've seen him like in contention, but to have a season like this, this is a great little turnaround for Justin Rose overall for the season.
I do believe he won the U.S. Open before. So maybe L.A. Country Club could be a tournament where we see him sniffing around once again.
Don't hate that.
But the golf world's been bringing us tons of content, man. It's been just a pleasure to watch. Obviously, we'll have our picks for next week's Memorial, which is a big tournament, and we'll continue to follow along. But Justin, it's been an absolute pleasure, man. Let's do it again.